different places, the YMCA, and as many of you know, I trek there occasionally, get on the torture machine called the stair stepper, and it was after a period of about 30 minutes of being on that thing that I decided, you know, it'd be a great time to just go sit in the steam room, relax, take it easy, kick back, and I have what is called my steam Bible. I take it in, sit down, I study it in the steam room, get nice and hot and warm and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it gets wet, I take it out, it dries, it kind of gets a little bit crumbly, it comes back. But it's just kind of my steam Bible. So I was really excited to just go sit down and enjoy a little steam and stretch out a little bit. So I get to the steam room and I open the door and, you know, steam comes out. It's like a scene from Dracula or something, you know. But even thicker than the steam is the tension that I feel inside of the steam room. There is a have you ever kind of walked upon a conversation that you know you shouldn't be a part of? You know what I'm saying? And you like want to say, excuse me, gotta go. You know, that type of a thing. I had already kind of cast my lot. I'd walked in, but I sensed as soon as I walked in, there was a tension in that steam room that was palpable. It was intense. And there was a man standing up, big, burly guy, shaven head, just kind of speaking to this other guy who was sitting in the steam room. Both looked to be about the same age, but they were talking philosophy. And I kind of walk in, and it was a heated conversation. Very heated conversation. So I kind of walk in with my steam Bible. Go sit in the corner, like a good boy. And I just open my Bible and I start reading. You know, kind of hard to see, but I make out the words, start reading. And this conversation is continuing to get intense. And this guy is just laying into this other guy. He says, yeah, all the religious leaders, can you believe the scandal in the Catholic Church and all the priests that are getting sued and all the terrible things that are happening and that are being exposed? I just can't believe that. It's just the most ridiculous. And I see this guy sitting in the steam room with this other guy hovering over him, and I just see him begin to melt. And it dawns on me that somehow religion came up in the conversation and that this person sitting is a believer. And this person that's standing up is just letting into him, just really just punching the daylights out of him in a verbal sense. And I'm sitting there reading my Bible and I'm getting a lot hotter, and it's not because of the steam, I assure you. And finally, I just can't, and I see this guy just literally shrinking. And no, he's not shriveling up because of the steam. I mean, he is just like, he's on the defensive and he doesn't know what to say. And this guy has obviously studied philosophy or something because he's just hitting him with these arguments. And this guy's not saying anything, he's just kind of backing into the corner. And finally I say, you know, it's interesting. As I'm holding my Bible, you know, like my cover's blown. I said, it's interesting that Jesus' harshest words were for religious leaders. And I said, you cannot confuse Jesus with the mistakes that his people make. And, oh, this guy was like, ha! Another victim, you know. And he turned around, he said, you know, I don't know what he called me. You think, you know, you're right and everyone else is going to hell, and you come knock on my door and you think everyone else in the world is wrong and you're the only one that's right, and I just can't believe that. And he started just kind of laying into me. And he said, so he's already attacking my faith, okay? And I'm just sitting there, I'm listening to him. I'm just letting him continue to, I'm gaining information, right? Okay? And so he's kind of coming at me, you know, and all this stuff. And then I can't even remember what I said, but I said something and it just stopped him. And then he immediately went to another rabbit trail. And he said, and he got on the subject of teenagers. So, first you attack my faith. He said, teenagers today, they're worthless. I'm going, you got to be kidding me. In my mind, I'm thinking this. He goes, yeah, they all drive BMWs. So teens, do we all have our BMWs, huh? Huh? You guys all have them? I know Brendan Wagner, BMW, but anyways, okay. Other than Brendan, we don't all have BMWs, right? So, you know, they don't obey their parents, they're not honoring of people, and you know, they show up in school, they don't, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just... And so I say, yeah, is there a problem with that? He's like, what do you mean, is there a problem with that? Of course there's a problem with that. I go, well, why is there a problem with teenagers being like that? He goes, because it's wrong. I go, why is it wrong? He goes, well, it's just wrong. I said, well, what do you base the fact that it's wrong on? Well, because my dad, when I was growing up, he taught me how we were supposed to live. So I said, you base it on your dad. But where does it come from? Where does your belief system come from? See, I said, I believe that there's a standard that's immovable, unshakable. It's truth. Truth is not an opinion. And so when I want to go to the truth, I go to the source. I said, you, it's just an opinion with you. You don't have no truth. It's here, it's there, it's everywhere. I mean, based on that, we should all get A's in school, right? Because it's my opinion. Teacher, sorry, that might be answer A to you, but to me it's answer B. Okay, no one really lives like that. When you get pulled over for speeding, you don't say, officer, I may have been going 50 to you, but I was really only going 30 to me, okay? When you go to pay for something in the store, you don't say, you know, as she says it's $20, I hand her a dollar and say, well, this might seem like a dollar to you, but to me it's 20, okay? See, no one lives their life like that. So I had this wonderful discourse with this guy, and he left the steam room, and we got out of there, and then we started talking about heaven and hell, and I just said, hey, look, I followed him out of the steam room, you know, now I'm like, oh, yeah, baby, come on, let's go. Getting hot in there, is it, huh? So we started talking about heaven and hell, and I said, hey, look, because he was, you know, upset that all the people coming to his door. I said, look, if you had the cure for some disease, and you knew it was the cure, you'd seen it work in your own life, would you not want to hand that cure out to someone else? Would you not be compelled, even if they didn't believe you, to help them see that this is the answer? I said, you may not agree with me, but at least understand that it is only out of love that I share what I believe is the truth. And this conversation was great. But in the course of this conversation, this guy that was kind of, all of a sudden he stood up a little taller. And he didn't shrink back, but now he was standing up. And when he left, he just kind of smiled at me, like, thank you for showing up. The world is really pretty good at tearing down our faith. It's pretty good at it, as evidenced just in this one encounter. But how many of you have experienced encounters like that before where there's been some intensity and all of a sudden your faith is being challenged? This morning, this might be kind of a bad picture maybe, but I want to just be, if I could, a cheerleader for you this morning, okay? Woo! I want to encourage you today. In a world that's really good at tearing down faith, I want to hopefully inspire you this morning to be someone that stands up for those people that are on the outside. We're going to talk about this morning the story of the prodigal son. Turn to Luke chapter 15, if you would. Luke chapter 15. Starting in verse 11, chapter 15 I think Jesus has got this preoccupation with lost things. I mean, don't you get that when reading Luke 15? Lost coin, I mean, now we lose a son. I mean, he's a fetish with finding things. And there's a picture in here of how we should be for those that are on the outside of our faith, or for those who have walked away from our faith. As a matter of fact, this morning, yesterday, I was compelled. I had an entirely different text of Scripture that I was going to use this morning for the text. And I really felt the Father compel me to speak about the lost son today. So I entitled the message, Learning How to Be a Brother by looking at a father. Learning how to be a brother by looking at a father. So this morning, let's just read, if we could, the parable of the lost son. A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the portion of goods that it falls to me." So the father divided his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there he wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and he joined himself to a citizen of that country, and that citizen sent him into the fields to feed the swine. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and yet no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and even to spare, and yet I perish with hunger? I will raise and go to my father and will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' And he arose and he came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to the servants, 'Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to be merry. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come home, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed the fatted calf.' But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. So he answered and said to his father, 'Lo, these many years I have slaved for you. I have never transgressed your commandment at any time, and yet you will never give me a young goat, that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this son of yours came, who has devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed the fatted calf for him.' And he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is now found.'" Three characters in this story. There's the younger son, there's the older brother, and there's the father. And what we're going to do this morning is I just want to read and comment and draw out what each of these characters look like. First of all, how many of you know someone that is like the younger son? I mean, how many of you honestly right now, you know someone that's like the younger son? They're away from the faith. They're not serving the Lord. Maybe at one time they did serve the Lord, but now they're not. See, I believe that we all have moments in our lives where God brings people into our lives to encourage us. And there are moments in our lives where God challenges us to be an encourager. I hold before you this morning three pieces of paper. This one was written to me in 1985. It's almost a quarter of a century old. This one was written to me in 1984. And then this one was written in 1989. Steve, why do you keep these pieces of paper for so long? Well, this one here, written in 1985, this was before I knew Jesus. And there was a young man in our youth group who was a senior in high school, and I was a freshman. And unless you've forgotten, there can be a bit of tension between those two class groups, right? Senior, Mr. Cool, Mr. Got It Together, freshman, let's see how much we can beat him up, you know, that type of mentality. Well, that happened in my youth group as well. I remember coming into youth group and being terrified because of the way I was treated when I came into youth group. Except for this young man, Mike Renner, who's a senior. He wrote me a little note It just said, hey, we missed you Wednesday night. Your smile was missed. Hope to see you next Wednesday. Wow. Three sentences. And this little piece of paper has lasted a quarter of a century. Not only did he write me this little note, but guess what? If a senior, who I thought was pretty cool, has taken an interest in me, guess where I'm going to be next Wednesday night? Guess where I'm going to be next Wednesday night? I'm going to be at youth group. Because someone cared. And guess what? That next Wednesday night, Mike Renner invited me somewhere. He invited me to this great place in Washington that we call Grand Coulee. Now, how many of you don't just, your heart just palpitates a little bit more just thinking about Grand Coulee, right? Let's just go to Grand Coulee. He invited me to Grand Coulee to hear a speaker. And it was that night that I trusted Jesus as my personal Savior. Because of three sentences. Because someone saw me as the younger brother. Someone saw me as someone that was away from the faith. Someone took responsibility. But you know, how many of you know it's not just about becoming a Christian, but that there's a walk to follow. There's a path to journey upon. And so, a year later, I have kept this letter, and you can tell this is old, probably from a Commodore, you know. This letter was from my youth pastor. And even though he had moved away, he wrote me this letter. And this letter speaks destiny into my life. When I read this letter, it says that I have been chosen to follow God. And Steve, follow Him with all your heart. Then you will begin to see things happen in your life. God will direct events and you will truly be blessed. And He will be with you through some of your bad times. You have no idea how powerful of a letter this was to me in my life. It was because someone reached out. Someone didn't give up. Someone believed in me. The younger brother. Let's look at the younger brother for a little bit. I want to focus on what's the younger brother's attitude. We know people that are outside of the faith. Well, what's their attitude? First of all, as we read through this, it says, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. It is summed up in two words. Give me. Someone that is on the outside of the faith, for the most part, has that attitude that life is about them. How many of you know someone that's maybe journeyed away from the faith and they kind of have this self-focused attitude? They're just like trying to explore everything possible. Give me. Give me. It sounds like, what about Bob? Give me, give me, give me. I need. That is the attitude of the younger brother. It's a self-focused attitude. It's an ungrateful attitude. He was not grateful for the things he had. He was not grateful for the home he had, for the father he had, for the protection he had. Give me, give me, give me. How many of you know that people right now are in that state? Do you have friends? Do you have family members that are in that state right now where they're just saying, give me, give me, give me. And you know what he was saying to his dad? You know what this younger brother was saying to his dad when he said, give me the inheritance? Do you know when you get the inheritance? When do you get the inheritance? When you gotta die. So in essence, the younger brother was saying to his father who loves him, Dad, I wish you were dead. And isn't that true for people that are journeying away from the Lord? I just wish you were dead. Gimme, gimme, gimme. How that must have hurt his father to hear his son say, basically, I wish you were dead. Then it says that the younger brother gathered together his father's livelihood. What does it mean? He gathered together his father's livelihood. And it says also, if you're taking notes, it's interesting to note that the son did not leave immediately, but he stayed for a few days. And the reason he stayed for a few days is because of that, those few words. He gathered all the stuff together. What it essentially means in the Greek is he liquidated all of his father's assets and turned them into something, he turned them into cash. How many of you had a great Christmas? Any of you, how many of you had a good Christmas, really? How many of you have traditions at Christmas time? Come on, keep your hands up. Some of you are afraid I might come and call on you. Raise your hand. How many of you have traditions at Christmas time? Whether it's singing a song, whether it's saying something. Right, keep your hands up. Look around. Keep your hands up. How many of you have traditions? There is a lot of people with traditions. And you know when that younger brother took his father's stuff, his livelihood, he took objects that had history. He basically was saying to his dad, "Dad, we have no traditions of value. Everything we've done as a family, all the little times we gathered around that table, all the times we've done this and that, it means nothing to me. All I want is the cash." And as a father, there's probably nothing that can hurt me more than to think that my sons don't value anything that we've ever done. Can you imagine how the father's heart is just breaking? His son, give me self-focus. All the values that you have, Dad, I just want cash. And then it says he traveled to a far country. What does it mean he traveled to a far country? He traveled away from a village that had a set sense of value and had core convictions and had community. He traveled from that village and he went to another place. He already dishonored his dad, but now he's saying, I also dishonor everything I grew up with. All the teachers, I don't care about you. Thanks for teaching me. You didn't mean nothing to me. And he leaves it. He burns his bridges behind him. And if you knew the culture of the day when this son did that, his life was in jeopardy. You understand? There were laws about what he was doing to his father. He could literally be stoned, killed for the way he treated his family. And it says he left. And then it says that he squandered his wealth on wasteful living. He was self-focused. He liquidated his assets. He rejected his people. And then he squandered his wealth on wasteful living. He paid the price to become popular. He left a place where he was known and he went to a place where he was unknown and he had to pay the price to live in this place because no one knew him. And so you bet he was buying rounds of beer. He was, yeah, I'll pay for that girl. Come on over here. He was living it up. Oh, and while he was living it up and while he was paying the bill, there were plenty of friends around him. But there came a time when the coffers ran dry and he did not have any more to give. He paid the price to become popular. This is a frightening image that Jesus is painting of people that are on the outside of the faith or that have walked away. And I don't want to discourage you this morning. Please don't hear me up here saying, oh man, I mean, we all leave now and be depressed all day. But there's hope. There's hope, or Jesus would have never shared this parable. Now I want to look at the older brother. First of all, understand this, if you're taking notes, write this down, that the responsibility of the older brother, the oldest son, was that of mediator. The oldest son, his job as the eldest, was the job as mediator. The person that should have come and worked peace into the relationship with the father and the son should have been the older brother. But it was not. As a matter of fact, from every indication, the older brother, first of all, the assets were not just given to one son, but it says he divided it for both of them. So there's every indication that the older son took his portion and continued to work. As a matter of fact, when we find him next, he's out in the field working. Every indication is that the older brother did not mediate between the younger brother and the father. And there's every indication that he went out into the field and he continued doing the same old stuff, day after day, busy with life. He was living a fruitful life. If we were to look at him, we'd probably say, good man. He's a hard worker. He hasn't dishonored his dad. And yet, he's missing it. Because he was not concerned with the relationship between the father and the younger son. It says that he had this mentality of the father. He says, I have slaved for you all of these years. The older brother had a mentality of the father, that the father was a slave master. I've slaved for you all of these years. I've kept every commandment. How many of us think that we can earn our right to be the father's child? We can never earn our right. It's only through Christ. And yet if we find the older brother trying to earn his right. You know, he's being fruitful. He's living his life, except that he forgot the younger brother. And man, I'll tell you, can I be just honest with you this morning? There is sometimes in ministry that I'm being very fruitful. And yet I'm forgetting the younger brother. Oh, I can get up here and give a message and I can study for my message, you know, but if I get a call, I can't take the call because after all, I'm studying for my message. And in God's eyes, in His commodity, people are first. The younger brother is first. We've got to get the younger brother. And then there was a party. And at this party, there was celebration because the younger son had come home. And you know who was supposed to be at the door greeting everyone when they walked into this party? It was supposed to be the older brother. Because he was his father's representative. And the older brother's job should have been, hey, welcome, welcome, glad you're here. Yes, our brother's home. Hey, I'm glad you made it. I'm glad you're here. Our brother's home. That was his role. His role was to welcome people to a party. And you know what? That's our role. That should be our role. Come home. There's a party if you just come home. But he didn't do it. He was too busy working in the field instead of being his father's representative. What am I saying this morning? I'm saying, people, don't forget the younger brother. If you do not know someone that's on the outside, then you're too busy in the field. And you need to start building relationships with people. Because there are a lot of sons and daughters that are not living with Jesus right now. Do not forget the younger brother. But now, let's look at the father. Because see, we need to learn how to be a brother by looking at the father. So, first of all, about the father, he understood that true love is a choice. And it's never forced. Do you hear that? The father understood that true love, it's a choice. It's not something you force on someone. That's why when the son said, give me the inheritance, the father didn't say, boom, you're history. Because the father wanted him to choose. And that is sometimes the most difficult thing that we can do, is to see someone that's choosing to walk away from their faith. And yet they have a choice. You can't force them back, but you keep reaching out, you keep loving them. The father looked for his son. How many of you have ever lost keys? Huh? Boy, I'm in good company here. No, it says that his son was lost. Do you hear that? It says his son was, he couldn't find him. Well, what does that imply? It implies the dad's out looking for his son. He's not lost if he's not looking for him. He's looking for the son. That is the heart of a father. He's looking for the son. In your life, are you looking for the one on the outside? Are you looking for the younger brother? Are you searching for him? Are you even praying, God, give me a younger brother that I can reach out to? Or a younger sister, ladies, that I can reach out to? Are you praying that? Is that the heartbeat? Because that's the heartbeat of the Father. And then it says this, that when the son was a long distance away, and I love this, my mom, whenever I'd come home late at night, it's kind of funny, I'd drive up the road and I would always see the curtain part, just a little bit. And I always knew it was her eye peeking out the curtain. She was just peeking out, just a little bit. And then as soon as I'd kind of get closer, I could see it shut. And then I'd hurry in, I'd hear her scuffling and try to get in before she got to bed. But I knew she was waiting for me. And I counted on it. Every time I come home, little curtain, whoop. And that's exactly what the Father was doing. Huh? And while he was a long distance off, he ran towards him. He ran at him. Drama team, I want you to go ahead and come up here and get prepared, please. Go ahead and come up here. And you know what? Think about what people wore during that time. A couple things you need to know about the culture. First of all, anyone over the age of 30 did not run. Did you hear that? Anyone over the age of 30 did not run. It was considered disgraceful for an elder to run. Literally, they could not run. And yet it says that he ran toward his son. Are you willing to be a little bit disgraced to go reach the younger brother? Because sometimes you're going to get that. And let me tell you something else. Sometimes you're going to be rejected. There are some of you in here right now reaching out to someone. You see them at a distance and you are running. Don't give up. Don't give up on them. Be willing to run the distance. And you know what? There's no guarantees. I wish there were, but there's not. There's no guarantees. But I really believe that if you keep running, they cannot help but see the Father's heart in you. So don't stop running. Go ahead and come on up, team. But listen, that's not all. Now, without going into too much detail, for this father to run, there were certain parts of his clothing that he had to lift up to run. Okay? In other words, if this man was going to disgrace himself by running, he was going to disgrace himself even more because he had to pick up his dress and run. Because that's what they wore. And you know what? When he did that, he exposed himself. When this father, can you imagine this son who looks at, you know, now he sees the wisdom in his father, he's been at the bottom, and now his father is running at him? First of all, his father had to run at him because the villagers would have killed him if they would have seen him. He ran at him as a protector. But he had to run because if he didn't, they would kill him. It'd be over. And he ran. And it says he smothered him and he kissed him. And when he did that, he restored him. This morning, I want to encourage you, be a restorer. Don't give up. Keep fighting for that person. Or maybe you might be that person. And God's saying, come home. This drama this morning is entitled, Everything.
Yeah, to start with this morning, I just want to say I think it's so important to remember, you know, to think about the cross and what the Lord did for us. And it's cool because, like, seeing a drama like this, I got saved right after I saw a drama like that. And so coming full circle to tell you a little bit about my testimony this morning, to hear Pastor Steve talk about the prodigal son and know that that's my story, you know, and to know that that's our story. Yeah, I think for me, I'm just going to share with you two memories that hopefully will give you an idea of what the Lord did to bring me to where I am today. And I'm really humbled to know that, that He chose me, that He was the Father that ran to me, you know, to welcome me home. So the first story, it's cool because thinking back, I can still remember how I felt. I'm 25 years old now, and this story takes place 5 years ago before I was a believer. I had been struggling with drug addiction for a really long time. I mean, all throughout my teenage years, I'd struggled. I'd been in drug treatment in Montana. Then I went and was a part of Teen Challenge for a while down in California. And I think during that time, God was doing things in my heart. God was doing things in my life. He was kind of blowing the clouds out of my head and heart. And so this specific memory, it takes place after I'd been to a party. I'd gone through rehab. I'd gone to AA meetings. I'd gone to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. I'd seen the school counselor, the drug counselor, the Christian counselor, and yet I'm still lost. And so this night, I'm driving home from this party, and I'd gotten high, I'd taken too much drugs, and as I'm driving home, I'm kind of wondering why I'm still around, you know, kind of reflecting on what happened that evening and going, you know, when I think about it, I really shouldn't be here still. And I was almost a little bit upset about that, because if you guys know my folks, my family, they're amazing. They're great people, and they love God. My dad and my mom, they're sitting right over here, my fiance. And I had grown up with that. I'd grown up going to church and grown up, you know, given every chance in the world. And so as I'm driving home this night, I'm going, God, you know, I have wrecked everything that's been good. You know, I have destroyed things that you've given graciously to me. You know, as I'm talking to him, I'm acknowledging that he's real, you know, and I'm kind of learning something all the while. And so I'm saying, God, you know what? I haven't done anything good for this. And here I am, I'm still breathing, and I'm upset about it because I'm lost and I don't know my way out. And so I said, you know what, Lord, if you're real, now's the time. I need to see you. I need to know you're real. Because I'm hurt. I'm lost. I don't see my way back out of it. All I see is what I've done wrong. You know? And I literally, thinking about the story of the prodigal son, like I am there. I'm him. And I'm going, God, how do I get out of this? And so I just said, Lord, if you're real, I need to see you, and I need to see you now. Because I can't live like this anymore. And so the second part of the story, the second memory is, how many of you guys were at the service just this last Sunday, the Christmas service at the high school? It takes place there. All the chairs are set up just like that. We're sitting, you know, such as we are in this room. And I'm like back there somewhere. And I'm sitting next to my brother who has been a believer for a couple of years. He's a strong man of God. Seriously, seriously loves God. And I'm sitting next to this guy, and Pastor Paul, he's spoken, he shared a message. There was a drama team that came up and did this deal up here, and, you know, it was Josh Talbot on the cross, you know, and he was obviously portraying Jesus, and I'd seen him around at school and stuff, and I'd seen how he was dedicated to the Lord, so I knew, you know, I think I could see past, you know, the people. You know, and really get the heart of the message. And I think that's what the Holy Spirit was doing that morning in my life. He was opening my eyes to this story of the prodigal son and how the Father loved him regardless. And so Pastor Paul afterwards gets up and he just says, hey, you know, like, this is a time where I want to invite people. I want to invite, first of all, those who have walked away from the Lord, who might have backslidden a while. This is your chance to respond to God and to come up if you want to get back on track with them. And so he invites those people to stand up. And I'm sitting right back there. And my brother, he stands up. And I'm, you know, something's happening in my heart. And you guys know that feeling when the Lord's like speaking something to you. He wants you to say something in public or do something that's going to be really embarrassing, probably. And you're like, no, I don't really want to do that. You know, I'm having those kinds of feelings in my heart. But as this is happening, it's kind of like, it's a real vivid memory. You know, and I hear Pastor Paul say, okay, now for those of you who haven't had a relationship with the Lord but want one, now's your chance to stand up. And I find myself like, I can remember like looking at the people, you know, as I'm kind of standing up and I'm seeing the back of heads and all this is happening and something's happening in my heart at the same time. It's exhilarating. Like the Lord is speaking to me in a way that is so deep that I can't ever remember being met by him up until that point like that. You know what I mean? And so I'm looking at the back of the people and Pastor Paul invites those people who have stood to come forward and receive prayer. And still I'm going, oh man, I don't really want to, you know, I'm scared, you know, all this stuff. And yet I find myself, I'm, you know, making my way out. Once I stood up, I couldn't really go back. You know, once you stand up, you hurry back to your seat and sit down, but you're going to look even dumber, you know? But regardless, like, the Lord was doing something in my heart that, like, when he showed me a glimpse of it, like, I wanted it. Like, I wanted it bad enough to stand up. I wanted it bad enough to try my hardest to believe for something that might be unbelievable, you know? And so when I stood up and I started making my way out, there was a commitment that happened in that moment. And it was a great time. Like, I remember about that. I remember that often. I think about that memory. I think about the cross and what God spoke to me that specific morning. Because it has a lot to do with what I do now, where I'm at now. You know, how I've been able to spend time getting to know him. You know? And so, yeah. Coming full circle, just to close this, I have the privilege of spending time with the Lord, of seeking the scriptures, of looking at the truth, and trying to figure out how to demonstrate, how to teach other people that. That's my life now. I get to teach the Bible full time. And it's great. It's a great privilege, and it's one I never would have chosen for myself. I never would have dreamed for. But something happens when God speaks, when God shows, you know, that he has dreams for your life and purpose, you know? And that's what it looks like to see the Father running at you, like with his arms spread wide. You see something in that moment that is unbelievable. And so I'm thankful for it. And I hope you guys remember, too, what that feels like. So.
Going to be a little bit different than anything we've done. Go ahead and stand up. There's not going to be any official dismissal in this room. I know I've kept you a little bit longer than maybe normal. But listen, I hope this morning that you see a father's heart that loves you. And I hope you feel the burden of a father who wants to reach out for the younger brother, the younger son. Because they're out there. So, without any kind of official dismissal, if you're here this morning and you have someone that you know God's put on your heart to reach out to, I believe God had me share this message this morning because he wants to see some miracles happen today. And so if you have someone that you're reaching out to but you're hurting, I want you to just go ahead and come down forward and we're going to just pray for you this morning. I'm going to trust that God is going to empower you to continue to reach out, to continue to touch, continue to love. And then this morning, if you're here and you are someone that you're away from the faith, but this morning you're seeing a father that's running at you, putting his arms around you, I want to invite you to come. And I'd like Aaron and Josh and others to come forward, and we're just going to begin to pray for people. If you need to head out, God bless you. Have an amazing day. Maybe just kind of be quiet as you head out. But if you want to spend some time up here, I believe that's why God designed this moment, because He wants to meet you here right now. So God bless you. Have an amazing day.